You're listening to This is Yoga Therapy. I'm your host, Michelle Lawrence, and I've had the opportunity to interview many of those who are making a difference at the intersections of yoga and health. And I'm here to share with you their stories and conversations. Thanks for listening. In today's episode, I interviewed Candace Clark. Cans is a licensed counselor and yoga therapist that specializes in trauma and mental health. She has supported many individuals and group therapy programs focused on the recovery from psychological trauma and the physical health challenges that appear to co-occur with post-traumatic stress. Cans is also completing her master's thesis on trauma-sensitive yoga in the South African context, and we're going to delve into that a bit on the podcast today. It's so great to meet you, Cans, and have you on the podcast today sharing the work that you do.
Thanks, Michelle. So honored to be here. Thank you.
So can you share with our listeners a bit more about yourself, where you live, where you studied yoga and yoga therapy, and how you came to do the work that you do?
Yeah, sure. So like you've said, I'm a licensed counselor and yoga therapist that specializes in trauma and mental health. I am based in Johannesburg, South Africa, which is our largest city in South Africa. So for those of you that are not familiar with South Africa is right at the bottom of the African continent. It's the country kind of right at the edge of Africa, the most south country that you can get. So I was born in South Africa. I'm raised in South Africa. I did spend a little bit of time working in the Middle East, but outside of that, I've really just been based in South Africa. So a little bit about me. I suppose my story and how I came to yoga and to be a yoga teacher and a yoga therapist is particularly important because that's kind of guided my work. I went through quite a severe spate of traumatic incidents in my first year out of what we call high school, which I think most people refer to as secondary school. And so as I was entering university and tertiary education, I went through several, in quite short successions, severely traumatic incidents, life-threatening incidents. And I don't share the details of that on this kind of platform, not because I don't want to, but just because I'm very aware of trauma triggers. Yeah. And of course, I do speak about them on other platforms and on my social media. But anyway, so that was kind of my entry into adulthood, which wasn't particularly pleasant. I was completely ill-equipped to process the trauma. I did see a psychologist. I did start with talk therapy, but really what was happening in my body wasn't being addressed. That cycle continued for years and basically culminated in a fibromyalgia diagnosis in my early adulthood. I knew something was wrong. I just couldn't really get to the bottom of it. My psychologist at the time, I then changed therapists, had mentioned mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is obviously, as it says, a mindfulness-based course that was being run by a local therapist. And that really completely changed my life and kind of set me on the path I'm in now. So I went, it was beautiful. So I went on that course. That's how I got introduced to yoga because I started really enjoying mindfulness, started researching it a bit more, found a yoga app, started practicing yoga. As a trauma survivor, I found it very hard to go into a studio, so really practiced on my own for quite a while, and then started obviously going into classes and really found incredible healing that I wasn't finding in other places through yoga, and really started to feel quite big shifts happening. So that led me to studying to become a yoga teacher, and I very quickly started specializing in trauma-sensitive yoga. I was trained in that by Holy Yoga in the US. And as I started teaching trauma-sensitive yoga, I also had completed my psychology training and moved into counseling, and I really wanted to work one-on-one with students because I could really support them releasing trauma and kind of the physical health challenges that I'd also experienced as a result of post-traumatic stress. And so I completed my yoga therapy training. I also did that through Holy Yoga and started working one-on-one with trauma survivors. So my path to yoga has in some ways underpinned my mission and my vision for my career as a yoga therapist.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
Personally, I don't know if that's interesting or not, but I'm married to a wonderful man. I've got two beautiful dogs that are my children. I love cooking. I love running. And I'm also a really passionate horse rider. I love horses. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah, it's great to get to know you a little bit. And it's oftentimes the case that it's through our own experiences and the healing power of yoga that we've also experienced in our lives that can be the catalyst for sharing what we do with others. I see that in myself and in so many other yoga teachers and therapists that I interact with. So talk to us more about something that you offer called Return to Presence. When did you create it? Who is it for? And how many folks have been served by it?
Okay. Yeah, this is my baby, I suppose.
Yeah.
This is such hard work for me, and it feels like such a big calling on my life, offering this kind of work. But Return to Presence was something that created in 2020, so it's been going for just under 2 years now, and was really born out of my desire to serve as many trauma survivors as I could with an accessible program. So I wanted it to be online, just from my own experience as a trauma survivor and struggling with studios. I wanted it to be really easily accessible. I wanted it to be free, which obviously also taps into accessibility. I wanted it to be effective. So I wanted it to be really helpful. I wanted to make sure that the people on it were being helped in their trauma recovery journey. And I wanted it to be evidence-based. So obviously I've got undergraduate and postgraduate degrees in psychology. I'm also currently busy with my master's degree. So evidence and science is really important to me in the programs that I design. So that's how it kind of started. That was my desire, my vision. And it's pretty much maintained that, which is great. Kind of what I started off with is what we've managed to maintain. So it's really for any trauma survivor. So regardless of gender, age, traumatic event, where they act in that recovery journey, it's open for everyone. But what's quite interesting about the program is we do seem to receive a lot of registrations from females, so predominantly females or those that identify as females, and those that have suffered interpersonal violence and grief, so a significant loss of family members, pregnancies, partners, parents. So that's kind of seems to be the participants that have registered for the program. And in 2 years, we've reached over 300 people. So we've had over 300 wow. registrations, which is incredible. Our biggest cohort was the one we just finished now in December. And we've trained 5 facilitators because it was just way too much for me to do on my own. So we've got 5 facilitators now that have been trained. I've got another 5 that are starting training tomorrow, actually. And then we're offering more time zone options. We're aiming to offer more languages. So it's really exciting. It's been a wonderful journey and I've learned so much.
It's great. So it's a trauma sensitive yoga program then?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's 8-week yoga program designed for trauma survivors that are wanting to use yoga as part of how they recover through their trauma. So it's obviously we're using a lot of trauma theory and trauma research that informs the program and how we teach and how the weeks are structured and a lot of our own mindfulness and kind of application of thought and science that's gone into the program.
That's awesome. And big kudos to you for making this program free. And I heard you say that you decided to do that to make it accessible. But I also would love to know, like, you're giving this away for free, and I really do think that's so awesome. But how do you make your living, right? And I ask this question so that it might be inspiration to others who want to offer a portion of their work for free.
Yeah. So, Michelle, I have a private counseling practice. So I still obviously commercially, that's quite successful and I make an income from that. I've got a private yoga therapy practice. So I obviously see my own private clients from there. And then I've also got paid programs. So I've got paid training programs for yoga teachers that want to specialize in this area, but also trauma survivors that are wanting to work in smaller groups or work on a particular area of their trauma recovery. And those are also paid programs. So yeah, luckily I still make a living.
Yeah, that whole mix of things that you do, right? You can make a living doing these other things, which gives you the ability to offer other things for free. And I think that's just so awesome. And it's something that maybe will inspire others who are listening. It's definitely how I am putting my work out there in the world right now too. And I think that there's a call for that.
Absolutely. You know, there's this concept, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, maybe some of the listeners might be, but called social entrepreneurship. And it's about combining impact with commercial success and how you design your business. And I think that that's, if I had to choose kind of a category of how I would define my, if we're talking commercials now, like commercially how I would define my yoga therapy practice and my business, it's that of social entrepreneurship and aiming for impact and commercial success. Both are important. Yeah. And, you know, the work that I do that is free, so like Return to Presence, and I also offer a number of different scholarships across the programs. But it's interesting for me because I say free and it sounds like I'm giving it away and it's kind of all for the benefit of the participants. And there is a huge benefit to participants that can access it. But I'm actually also getting loads of experience, loads of exposure. People are sharing about the program and that can lead to private clients. So, you know, it's not like, it doesn't feel very one-sided to me. It does feel like I get a lot of benefit personally and professionally from it too.
Yeah, and that's great acknowledgement. I totally hear that. And it's the whole big picture of it, right?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think when you aim for impact, this is a personal opinion, right? I get that it might not resonate for everyone, but for me personally, when you aim for impact, you are successful. And I know that financially, you know, having enough money to survive is important, but there's so many broader definitions of that. And I do feel like the financial success follows impact, if that's what you make your kind of priority. And I suppose I'm a testimony to that. That it can work when that's your kind of primary focus.
So let's talk about the research project next, your master's thesis. And I was looking at your website in preparation for this conversation today, and I'm going to read something that I saw there. And so this is what it says. It says, the South African Stress and Health Study, which is SASH, found that the trauma exposure of the general population in present-day South Africa is approximately 78.3%. So that's huge. And what you say, it's no surprise that South Africans are exposed to very high levels of trauma. This is higher than the global average. However, there is unfortunately limited research on trauma-sensitive yoga in the South African and broader African context. So you're changing that, and you're sensitive to the local context of your students and their communities. You take international world-class research and understand it through a local lens. And this ensures effectiveness in your individual context for your students. So what are you doing? Give us some more insight into it and help us better understand the high stats on trauma in South Africa too. And let us know what specifically you're doing through your research. And when do you hope to complete it?
Okay. Yeah, sure. So South Africa is a country that I think it's important to understand the historical context as well as kind of the current context. And Return to Presence obviously serves mostly South Africans or people that reside in South Africa. So we're very conscious of this. So South Africa's history is, I think a lot of people know this, but if you aren't aware, we had racially motivated but government-sponsored violence in our country. So we had a system called apartheid, which basically gave a certain amount of rights and opportunities if you were white, and then a certain amount of rights and opportunities if you were non-white. And even the non-whites were kind of classified of what level of opportunity they got based on the most ridiculous criteria. In fact, just to kind of digress on that point, I've got quite dark skin and dark hair. I classify as Caucasian, and my dad also has quite dark skin and dark hair. During apartheid, he spent a lot of time surfing on the beach, and he was very tanned. And he was often not allowed into white-only bottle stores and white-only sections because they said he wasn't white. So, I mean, it was just so arbitrary how this kind of classification came up. And it created massive issues in the country. I mean, we had people that were not white were moved from their homelands. So land that they owned, homes that they owned, places that their families had lived for decades and sometimes centuries, they were forcibly removed and put into very dry, arid parts of the country where the land wasn't fertile and they couldn't really farm properly. Their animals were killed. It was horrific, really, what happened during apartheid. So we've got quite deep-seated, deep-rooted trauma as a country that's kind of based on race and based on kind of government endorsement and government sponsorship, which is just horrific for all sorts of reasons. And that's the background. I mean, before that, we had colonialism. So there's kind of this history of land being taken away from people, homes being taken away from people, people not having access to basic human rights, people not having access to basic necessities, things like electricity, water, sanitation, homes, like just that's our country's history. It's horrific, the trauma that people have been exposed to. That's kind of the history of our country and what's happened and kind of what lives in our psyche as a country. And we experienced a change in that in 1994. So Nelson Mandela, which I'm sure most people will know, became our president. We entered into kind of this new age of democracy. But I think a lot of what was promised in 1994 has not been seen through. And while there have been amazing strides made in our constitutional rights and our justice system, I mean, there has really been amazing things done there. There is still massive issues with access to basic healthcare services. So we have very, very poor healthcare infrastructure. We have a severe shortage of healthcare professionals. It's referred to as the brain drain. So a lot of our healthcare professionals move to developed nations like the UK and Europe, Australia, and less so, but still do move to the US. And that has also filtered into mental health care. So we have a severe shortage of psychologists and psychiatrists in our public health care system, which serves 80% of the population. So 80% of our population is served by public health care, 20%, which is kind of the upper middle class, those that can afford private medical aid, they are served by private hospitals. So while there's still some shortages there, they, you know, they can get what they want most of the time. It might be expensive, but they can get it. They've got access to mental health care. 80% of our population doesn't. And that's even more severe in rural areas where there's a lack of road infrastructure even, you know, let alone a hospital or a psychologist. There's stories of women being brought into hospital that are in labor in wheelbarrows because there isn't transport. Wow. That's the country we live in, even all these years into democracy. On top of all of that, just kind of, I know I'm painting a really bleak picture, but it just gives it's the reality of the situation and it gives a very good sense of why trauma is so rife in the country. We also have a massive problem with our economy. So we have an economy that hasn't grown at the rate it should have. Unemployment figures sit somewhere around 30% of all working adults that should be working are unemployed. And that doesn't take into consideration people that have given up looking for employment, kind of the hopeless job seekers. So if you think of the healthcare system, you think of the kind of lack of basic infrastructure, the economic climate, there is still racially motivated violence. We still have a massive problem with that, just given our history. You take all of this into consideration. Oh, the other thing I haven't mentioned, sorry, I should also mention this, is we have a huge issue with crime, which I think we kind of, if not the top country when it comes to crime rates, we're definitely up there. And women in particular, I can't recall the study. I read about it in November, December last year, but South Africa has been rated as the most dangerous country for a woman to live in, given the crime committed against women. So to give you guys an example, I live in a kind of a middle class home in a middle to upper class suburb. I have got walls around me, but they are all electrified. So we have an electrified fence. I would never walk outside my home. So every time I leave my home, I get in my car to go somewhere. So Michelle, when I spoke earlier about getting stuck in traffic, it's because I can't walk to the park. It's not safe. I get in my car and take my dogs to a park. I can't walk my dogs outside my front door. There's even areas in my city where I wouldn't drive. I wouldn't even feel safe to get in an Uber to go to those kind of areas. So, you know, on the backdrop of all of that, I think it starts to become really clear why we have such an issue in South Africa with trauma and with post-traumatic stress.
Yes.
Because particularly women, we are faced with life-threatening experiences and triggers almost, I would say, on a daily basis because of the way we have to live our lives and kind of navigate the terrain of a country like this. So trauma and post-traumatic stress, and I mentioned some of the trauma that I've experienced in South Africa, and it is related to these things that I've mentioned. And it had a significant impact on not just me personally, but also on my occupational functioning, which means kind of how you do your job, right? How you show up at university, how you do your job. And so trauma wrecks that. And then you don't have access to the mental health care services that you need to have access to be able to resolve this trauma, to be able to get treatment for PTSD. So you can see that it just leaves this gaping hole in our country and with all this traumatic experience or traumatic events that happen, but no mental health care service. So how are you supposed to bridge the divide between those two things? So that's the gap that I saw, and that's the gap that I've stepped into, and that's the gap that is my heart's work that I believe I'm put on this earth to do, is to bridge that gap in a country like South Africa, and maybe future my career might be other countries, but in a country where there is just such trauma and yet almost zero access to the right kind of mental health care.
And so you're looking at how trauma-sensitive yoga is having an impact through the work that you're doing as part of your master's thesis then?
Yes, absolutely. So trauma-sensitive yoga, which has been made amazingly kind of popular and prevalent in the US, has started to filter into other countries. And we don't have any kind of firsthand research really on the African continent. There's a little bit being done in Kenya that I actually picked up towards the end of last year, but predominantly it's absent. So we know that it does work. We know that trauma-sensitive yoga, obviously done in the right way with the right protocols, which is maybe a whole different podcast, but done in the right way can help trauma survivors experience symptom alleviation and in some cases can actually be a standalone treatment for PTSD. So there's an incredible study that's been done in the US that I'd love to just mention by a researcher called Ursula Kelly. She's been working with military sexual trauma survivors in the US, and kind of her landmark research, which they've done over 5 years, it's been a randomized control trial, which is kind of like the gold standard in academic research. It's very rigorous. And they've discovered that a trauma center, trauma-sensitive yoga, which is obviously a particular protocol, has achieved the same outcomes as cognitive processing therapy, which in the States is the gold standard when it comes to psychotherapeutic treatment for PTSD. It's achieved the same outcomes, and in some cases, the symptom alleviation's actually been quicker, and they've also seen better retention rates in therapy, and they haven't had as many dropouts as they experience in cognitive processing therapy. That's been, for trauma-sensitive yoga globally, that has been a landmark study and such an important study to show us the power of yoga and the power of trauma-sensitive yoga done right when it comes to treating trauma and working with trauma survivors. Obviously, scope of practice and all of that's important, so I'm not suggesting that, you know, yoga teachers can treat PTSD, but it's just important to know that that exists and that that's the direction the field is moving in. And that's what I'm hoping to bring to Africa, and more specifically South Africa. So South Africa is largely the same. Kind of our treatment of PTSD is psychotherapeutic, which, to be honest, in our public healthcare system is actually not really happening anyway because of the lack of resources. But in a perfect world, it would be psychotherapeutic. And there are inherent challenges in that that result in things like very high dropout rates, so people with PTSD are not finishing treatment and therefore not getting the treatment they need, because verbal memory recall is very difficult in trauma. It can be re-triggering and re-traumatizing. And there's a number of other reasons why it's not ideal, but it's an option and it's understandably a good option, and there's good research that supports psychotherapeutic interventions for trauma. But it's not the only option. There are other options, and research is showing us that, particularly when it comes to trauma-sensitive yoga. And in a country like South Africa, where we already are so resource-constrained, it's much more cost-effective for our health system to have something like trauma-sensitive yoga as opposed to a psychologist seeing somebody one-on-one we don't have those resources. If we did, it might be a different conversation, but we don't have those resources, and I don't think that's going to change in the next decade or two. So we need to find a way to fill that gap, and I do believe trauma-sensitive yoga could be exactly that.
Yeah, that's fabulous. So you're actively doing this research. When do you hope to have your thesis completed and shared the results?
Oh, Michelle, the golden question.
No pressure, right?
Yeah, so I would love for it to be this year. But the reason I kind of put a caveat on that is this is such important research. And to me, it's a landmark research for our country and for our mental health care system. And I've experienced challenges in getting this going and finding the right supervisor. I mean, it's very, I don't know what the right word is, avant-garde, forefront. Like, I don't know. It's very, very
cutting edge.
Very cutting edge. For South Africa, it's very cutting edge. You know, we're still researching psychotherapeutic interventions for PTSD. When I mention yoga and those kind of circles, I get blank stares. So, like, it's very cutting edge. So I've experienced a lot of challenges in kind of getting going, getting things through. I'm now heading into kind of a research approval stage where they look at what I'm suggesting in terms of a trial, so a clinical trial, and getting that approved by the healthcare faculty. So, I mean, there's a lot of steps, and I am patient. I think this is important work, and I think this has the potential to change millions of lives. And if that means it takes longer than this year, then that's what it means. I'm in this for the long game. I want to change mental health care in South Africa. And if that takes a while, it takes a while.
That's huge. And I'm really impressed and grateful to know that you're there doing the work. And like you say, however long it takes, right? Because you want to get it right.
Exactly. It's quite controversial research, right? I'm potentially, I mean, I'm trying to be very diplomatic about it, but it's controversial. It's potentially changing a bunch of policies and kind of standard processes, and that does not come without pushback, right?
Yeah, and it exposes sort of a very bleak state of the current status quo, too. So, yeah, I can see how controversial it might be, and I wish you well on this, and I look forward to circling back with you in another year or two and see where everything has landed.
Yeah.
So as you know, because you listen to the podcast, I like to ask this question at the end for each person. I'd love to know what your yoga practice looks like. So we put a lot of emphasis on that in our program, that when you're studying and if you want to do the work of a yoga therapist, you have to start with you. And clearly, like, you have a story and you've experienced the power of yoga and you are sharing that now with others. On a daily basis, what does your yoga practice look like?
Okay. So from a spiritual perspective, I do something every morning. I've kind of just coined the term. I don't know if there's if this is actually a term, but it's called Bible before my phone. So I'm a practicing Christian, so I open my Bible, I meditate on scripture, I research scripture, so I look at kind of biblical root words, what kind of the life and times were like then, to place things into context, so really kind of unpack scripture and what scripture means to me and how it applies to my life. And then I engage in prayer, so usually pray into kind of where I'm experiencing challenges, where I feel like I need God's supernatural support to open a door for me or just kind of comfort me if I'm having a really rough time. And so from a spiritual perspective, that's something I do before I pick up my phone. As I say, Bible before my phone, that's literally the first thing I do in the morning. And if I've got a busy morning, or I don't know, I've had a rough night and I've woken up late, I'll just kind of look at one scripture and just spend a minute or two meditating on it and then get started with my day. So it's never, I never let kind of an excuse come between me and that spiritual practice. I think it's very important. Yeah. And then from a physical kind of yoga practice, I really, really enjoy organic movement. So I incorporate traditional yoga poses with organic movement. And I just ask myself a simple question of, how do I feel today? And I give myself a moment to answer that. And what do I need today? And I give myself a moment to answer that. And then the movement that aligns with that is what I move into. And that's been really healing. I think as a trauma survivor, it's personal experience, but I can also see it with my students and participants and clients. trauma tells us that our perspective is not important, takes away that power. It takes away our ability to make nourishing choices for ourselves. And that practice of how am I feeling and what do I need has changed my life. It's really helped me heal and get my power and confidence and autonomy and intuition back. Just two simple questions.
That's lovely. And I totally believe it, you know, just based on what I've experienced and what I've seen and how yoga works. And it's just so great to hear a lot of different stories and now from all over the world that illustrate the personal experience of that too. Thanks so much for sharing that and everything today, Cans. It was really nice speaking with you today and getting this perspective and getting behind the work that you're doing and just being an inspiration. So thanks.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, Michelle. Thank you. I hope I've answered everything. If there's anything else I need to answer.
I think you did great. Yeah. And I'll put a link to your website up on our show notes. It's candiceclark.co.za, but folks can find it there if they want to read more about you and stay in touch. Thanks a lot.
If you'd like to learn more about who we are and what we do, visit us at innerpeaceyogatherapy.com.